This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing Dumplin'. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready
for One Dry Kiss?
Yeah! Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we are doing Freedom July! Woo! And the land of the not really so free. It's a little bit fascist right now.
Yay! Run by a bunch of cowards who aren't really brave.
I am here with the star-spangled banner to my heart, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Ooh, and I am here with my firework, Corinne Edding.
Guess what, Tamara?
What?
I still got it. Picture this.
Your spindrift?
No. Oh. No, got it. Not spindrift. Picture this. I am in not my local independent bookstore retailer, because that's where I like to go. However, I was looking for instant gratification for a particular book.
Got it.
And Buns and Noodles had it. So.
Okay.
I went to Barnes and
Noble. Buns and Noodles?
Barnes
and
Noble's.
The bookstore that you were. Okay.
So I went to Barnes and Noble's. And I was going to the section, getting the book, and I see a guy. He's eyeing me. He's like, oh, yeah, I see you over there. And I'm like, I'm kind of ignoring you. I'm trying to find my book. I'm in the right section. And the guy comes over, and he's like, may I bother you with a question?
Yes.
And I was like, sure. And he's like, I was just wondering how old you were. And I was like, 45-ish? And he's like, damn, you've aged well for an older woman.
Oh, thanks. Okay, bye-bye.
And he's like, I'm 25. Are you interested in getting together? And I was like, no. He's like, are you sure we could have a real good time? This gentleman is specifically cruising Barnes & Noble to pick up ladies, which I found to be humorous, and also I don't think that being called a looking good for an older woman is really the compliment that he thinks it is.
No, it's definitely not. That is something that a 25-year-old would think is a compliment. Yeah. You backed out on that, Corinne, but you could have had a real good time.
I know. And yet I somehow resisted.
What section of the bookstore was he in?
Well,
self-help.
When we first crossed paths,
do it yourself.
Is near the places where they have little stands where they have little Totoro sculptures and stuff like that. So,
oh, that's, he was in the toy section. That makes sense because he's so young.
That's where I initially saw him. I moved on to the cookbook section because I always think that, you know, cookbooks will cure my life. So far, that has not happened, but maybe this one will.
You haven't found the right cookbook. That's all there is to it.
I know. Just like I haven't found the right 25-year-old. And so, you know, I picked up the cookbook and I did not pick up the man.
I can totally picture you guys meeting in the calendar section and him being like, say, good looking, how old are you? And you just picking up the calendar and rifling. This is when I was born, and this is probably when you were born. So that's a big hell no thanks.
Well, I will tell you that 25-year-old had not aged well. He looked older than 25, and not in a handsome way. I mean, he was fine looking, but
oh, see, you totally should have said that. Really? I look good for my age? Well, you don't.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have probably figured out a nice way to spin that so it didn't sound so mean. You look a lot older than 25. Wow.
It's probably for me, you know, why I look so good for an old woman is probably because I got the skin scrub, and so now I'm 20% less ruddy than you.
With your young glowing skin, yes, and his old ass poochy, saggy skin, you probably could have together made a couple that was appropriately aged apart.
See? Mm-hmm. Perfect.
In theory, you know. not in actuality.
And now you're just regretting that you're not single, ready to mingle, so you can go to Barnes & Noble and get yourself a hot 25-year-old.
Shockingly, no. No, I'm not.
What?
Yeah. No. No. I get plenty of action when I walk through my center, and it's not good action. And I'm like, too young, too weird, too gross. Stop looking at me. My eyes are up here. So
look, if you weren't wearing bustiers and crop tops and mini skirts all day to work, you know, you're right. Just asking for it.
They keep telling me not just to wear tassels, but to actually put on a shirt. But I'm a rebel. You know what? It's casual Friday. I can wear whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
You don't have parameters on casual Friday. Then this is me casual.
The nipples are covered. So done.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, my day wasn't as exciting as that because I went to a memorial service for a coworker who passed away.
Aww.
And it put things into perspective because he was born in 70, which is what, 6 years older than me?
And me. Yeah.
Yeah. And oof. Yeah. And he got cancer, very fast diagnosis, found out in March, passed away in early June.
Wow.
Yeah, it happened real, real fast, but it was somber. Don't like those ceremonies. Never have, never will. But it was a nice one, and they were showing his pictures of all the stuff that he's done, like, throughout the years with him and his wife, and they were lovely, and they did a lot. Like, he died very young, but he packed a whole lot of life in when he could, and it makes me realize, like, I need to do more stuff. I need to do way more stuff.
Well, we are going to Obsessed Fest in the fall, so.
Yeah, that's in October. That's like how many months away? Yeah, I'm super excited about that. Don't get me wrong, but that is like a ways away. And I have been hankering for some things, not my grist probably since, you know, he passed away. I've kind of been like, I want to do more stuff. And Larry and my schedule is so different.
Yeah.
He works in the very, very early morning. I work pretty late, well into the evening. And so we don't have a lot of quality time together.
Yeah.
And so I was like, we're going to make the most of these weekends. We're going to do stuff. So we've agreed to go to a drive-in movie.
Nice.
Because they opened one. And then also there's a bar down the street from us that has vintage arcade games, much like the one we went to.
Aww, fun.
So we're going to hit those places up. And I was like, super, super excited. I'm like, we're going to have date nights. It's going to be awesome, except not this weekend because his son and grandbaby are coming again for the 4th of July. I love it. I get to be a surrogate grandma, but it's kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm getting all the parenting responsibilities that I never had before. Like, no, you can't go out. You're babysitting. You're watching the kiddo.
Oh my God. You just called yourself a grandma. And I'm like, huh? On top of that, Denise isn't a grandma. Your older sister.
Hey, my sister is not a grandma yet. And I'm just a surrogate grandma.
Who has children.
Yes. Yeah. Who has actual children. Yeah. A, I look good for my age, much like you.
Yes, you look glorious.
And B, I have been just marveling at the different nicknames that Larry has donned me. He's called me Grammara. And what was the other one? Oh my God, Grammara and I think Grammy. Grammara and Grammy.
Well, I had a grandparent who I called Grammy. So maybe I should start a...
No, I'm just going to stop you right there. It's going to stop you right there.
Look, Ramara, it's nothing.
I know. So it's funny because I heard that and I was like, what is the name? Why is everybody trying to hybrid my name? You call me Bramara and he calls me Grandma. Fucking ass. I can't remember. I have to get him in here when he's not playing video games to regale me with all the stupid names he thinks up on the spot.
Well, you know, anyways. Me calling you Bramara is to remind you that you are now obligated to be my surrogate sister. So,
yes. Probably the same with Larry. Like, hey, you're in this with me now. You're a grandmother. Ha ha.
No pressure. No pressure.
No pressure at all. I'm just going to lightly shove that into you real, real, real easy.
Also, I know of this really exotic place that you could visit that has a place where you can stay. It's called Oakland. It's the land of oaks.
Sounds green and lush, is it?
Well, it is right now in my apartment because somebody is like smoking weed in one of the neighboring apartments, and it is just wafting away into mine.
Whew. Oh, my goodness. I bet our neighbors used to hate me and my ex because he was always outside smoking something, whether it be meats or joints. Or... oh, God, there was always something on fire in our patio.
Oh, I would have just been knocking on your door with, like, my Tupperware being like, I am ready for my tithe of meats, please.
And he was always ready, too. That's why he cooked enough for six people. Just waiting for the day that somebody's going to come downstairs and complain. And now that we've shared our hot love affairs in the library.
Sizzling.
Hot barbecue recollections and very cool, sad memorial service stories. Corinne, do you have a synopsis?
Well, yes, I indeed do. We're doing Dumplin'. Woo! Dumplin', excuse me.
You can see it on Netflix.
Yes. I would like to take a moment, put in a caveat. I use the term fat, and I use it a lot, and I am fat, and I don't see it as an insult. I see it as just like, hey, I'm fat. That's okay. It's not a big deal. So that terminology may be triggering for some people or, you know, whatever. And I can understand how that is. But just for context, I am fat and I use the term fat. And in a lot of the fat acceptance world, fat is the term that is used. So
got it.
So I just wanted to put that out there. So anyways.
I'm sorry. I prefer the term pleasingly plump. Okay.
Okay.
I am offended by your fat definition, I reject it.
You can use the term pleasingly plump. I can't wait for your plosives. Willow Dean is a fat teenage girl growing up in Clover City, Texas, where one of the biggest events is the Miss Blue Bonnet Beauty Pageant. While she does get teased, she's pretty confident in herself, due in large part to her Aunt Lucy, who is also fat, who taught her to be proud of who she was, that a swimsuit body is a body with a swimsuit on it, and introduced Willow Dean to her bestie, Elle. After her Aunt Lucy dies unexpectedly, she is left with her hard-working and beauty pageant-winning mom, Rosie, played by Jennifer Aniston. But Willow Dean doesn't feel like her mom understands her, because she doesn't. So when Will runs across an old beauty pageant application that Aunt Lucy filled out, she is inspired to enter the beauty pageant herself and to try and subvert the genre into something bigger and better. Will Willow Dean turn into a Barbie-style valley girl? Will Will do a seance to bring her aunt back from the dead so Lucy can coach her for the beauty pageant? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
Those are both very good options. We'd be excited to see both of those spinoffs.
So, Miss Tamara.
Yes.
Do you want to get us started on the wave, flick, flick, flick beauty pageant movie that is Dumplin'?
Sure. I could eat a few dumplings right now. That actually sounds really good.
It does sound very good.
Dumplings. Yeah. I sure can. Thank you for asking. I'm going to try not to incorporate a Texas accent throughout this script, but I cannot make any promises.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Thanks. An 8-year-old Willow Dean rides in a car with her Aunt Lucy through the countryside of Clover City, Texas. Willow Dean narrates, I learned a lot of things from my Aunt Lucy. She taught me how to spell my name, Willow Dean, and more importantly, she taught me how to love a name like that. She basically raised me because my mom was too busy being a local celebrity to do it. She also, and this is important, taught me about Dolly Parton. Angels sing, the heavens open up, and a buxom blonde materializes to become little Willow Dean's spiritual guide.
Yes!
In theory, that is. In theory. They roll up into town and get some donuts for their upcoming Dolly Parton party. But while Willow Dean is waiting outside of the store for her aunt to pay, a couple of boys come up and make oinky noises at her. She retreats into herself until her aunt comes out, chasing the boys off and letting Willow Dean know, don't you mind them. As Dolly would say, it's hard being a diamond in a rhinestone world.
Aww.
Aunt Lucy is a glorious fat woman with fantastic fashion sense. She's wearing a colorful number on this particular day, complete with a rhinestone B-shaped pendant. She is a great role model for young, chubby young... Young Chubby Young. Okay, she was young, apparently, because it says it here twice. Willadine, who basks in her aunt's advice and love. And I put at the end of that, Willadine's not even that fat. What the hell? Like, she is, she's got some cheeks. She's a little heavy.
Yeah.
But I would not, like, oh my God. No, 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 no.
No, but like, here.
Do not need to be.
The thing about it is I've been thinking about it. Been putting some of my mm-hmm. thinking thoughts in.
Okay.
And this whole.
Share those thinking thoughts with us.
Diet beauty industrial complex that is determined to get women dieting like all the time has us thinking from a very young age that regardless of how thin we are fat. And so, like, I was just mm-hmm. thinking about the different pictures that I've seen of myself over the years and the different pictures that my friends have seen of themselves over the years where they've been like, at that moment in time, they're like, oh, I'm so fat. But then, like, 10 years later, they look back on that picture and they're like, oh, I wish I weighed that much. I look so yes. good then, you know.
Oh, so true. So true.
And so if it's like, if you're anything but willowy, you know, you're out of the mold.
Well, I'm going to reiterate because I know I've said it before. That one time I heard at my dad's memorial service, my mom telling a long lost distant relative that me and my sister always ate the same, always played the same, had the same activity levels, and I was just always a little bit heavier. So no matter what, I would never be willowy.
Yeah.
So I feel you, Willowdine. Through her aunt's Dolly Parton parties, which is basically a tea party with donuts, where I'm sure they play Dolly Parton music. Sign me up, please. Willowdine ends up making friends with another girl her age named Elle. At one point, Elle and Willowdine write a thank you letter to Dolly for introducing the two of them. Yee! And she wrote back, "The greatest friends have nothing and everything in common all at once. Sounds like you two girls are different versions of the same story."
Aww.
Oh, Dolly. Damn it, Dolly, you and your words of wisdom.
Ugh.
But Willowdine is most thankful that she has Elle and Dolly because they helped her get through the hardest thing she's ever had to endure, living without her Aunt Lucy. She did not go out for cigarettes and disappear. Unfortunately, she dieted. Willowdine narrates, as Dolly would say, you want the rainbow, you gotta put up with the rain.
And now I'm getting teary. At this movie, I cried throughout the whole entire fucking thing.
Oh, you know, you told me that, and I was like, Corinne, what were you crying about? I watched it. I cried twice. I was like, all right, I'm so sorry. I haven't questioned you or said anything or even had those thoughts in my head as I was teary-eyed going, God damn it. God damn.
Love the movie. Super glad that we are choosing
absolutely.
It. Like, no regrets, but...
Mm-mm.
Oh, when I watched it the first time, my sister was alive, and, you know, I'm sure I was, like, touched at certain points in it. Absolutely. I may have even teared up a couple of times. But damn, the whole Aunt Lucy, her like closest relative dying off and, you know, everything. And I was like, yes. It's me!
Suddenly.
It's me!
Yes. Yes.
Oh, so yeah, I ugly cried throughout it.
Not feeling like you lost your one fucking confidant in the world that knew you best in your family.
Yeah. We were each other's wing women, but she went and died it on me, so there you go.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of a wing woman can you be if you died it on someone, huh? That's what I'm asking.
An angel with angel wings, I guess.
Yes. Point.
She's just trying to one-up you. I'm your wing woman. How about two wings?
It's the first summer after her Aunt Lucy died and Willowdine is a teenager doing her regular summer routine with Elle, hanging out at the public pool. They float and chat on their beautiful watermelon and donut tube pool floats as boys cannonball into the water, yelling such gems as hippo at Willowdine. Gotta love it. The boys are also giving this treatment to another fat teenage girl who is sitting in a lounge chair wearing a cute summer dress. A teenage boy cannonballs into the pool shouting, "Well!" and splashing the girl who giggles. Willowdine looks on with disdain, saying to Ellen, "I can't with Millie Mitchell, Chuck. I may be fat, but at least I'm not clueless." Ellen glances over at Millie, who is laughing with a couple of friends, and responds, "Well, She seems happy, so at least there's that. Willowdean agrees, but still isn't impressed.
She's not impressed, but I do believe that Millie Mitchell-Chuck is speaking to two guys who seem, like, enraptured with what she was saying. Like,
I was pretty sure they were gay, but...
Oh, that's probably... They're drawn to her fabulousness, yeah. Then that makes sense. That checks out, yeah.
But also, she knows what's going on. She doesn't think it's funny. This is just her defense mechanism, you know? And she's just
she's not buying into that shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're not going to make me miserable and ruin my good time.
Willowdean has, like, the internalized fat phobia because, hi, it's hard. You have that in the culture all around you. So, you know, it's like, I may be fat, but I'm not one of those fat people. You know, it's like,
yeah.
No, you know, Ellen's right. She's just like, she's just being her. But still, we do all wish that Millie would tell those boys to fuck off. But, you know, that's not in her nature.
No, I completely admire her good natured, like, sunshininess, because I, Lord knows, I am not like that.
Later in the afternoon, when Ellen and Willowdean are leaving the pool with delicious looking snow cones, a girl comes running across the grass towards them, yelling happily, "Elbel!" It's Callie, a popular girl who works with Ellen at the clothing store Sweet 16, and she's going to be doing the blue bonnet pageant this year. Ellen tells Callie that Willowdean's mom runs the pageant. She's Miss Teen Blue Bonnet 1991. Callie looks over at Willowdean with undisguised surprise. Your mom is Rosie Dixon? Even though she can't fathom Rosie being Willowdean's mom, Callie is not a girl to pass up an opportunity and tries to wrangle an invite to come over to Willowdean's and ask her mom some questions. But Willowdean isn't interested. Letting Callie know that her mom is barely ever home. She's either doing pageant stuff or wiping old people's butts at the nursing home. She says with a smile, "That's what happens to a lot of ex-beauty queens. Sorry." Not sorry. After they part ways with Callie, Elle chastises Willowdean for not being more welcoming. But Willowdean is unapologetic. Ellen runs up to her boyfriend, giving him... Oh, good sentence there. Giving him what?
Giving him all of her.
Giving him a hug. And that's not a euphemism. And Willowdean greets him as she walks to her car. "Hey, Tim." He warmly says, "Bye, Will." And she gets in her car, rolling down her window, shouting out at Ellen, "For today's grand prize, name the Billboard hit that features the sound of a typewriter off the Odd Jobs album." Ellen has this. 9 to 5, Willow confirms, "We have a winner." And the song, "Tumble out of bed and stumble to the kitchen." Song 9 to 5 comes on as Ellen starts dancing towards Willowdean's car, singing along with Willowdean and running alongside her car as Willowdean slowly pulls out of the parking lot.
My, 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 we inadvertently have a Dolly Parton theme going on because we had 9 to 5 last week, and she is a big part of this movie.
Yes, we did an accidental Dolly duo, and I'm here for it.
Me too. Corinne calls this next section, "We meet the tall drink of water Beau and see Rosie hermetically sealed in a dress." After the pool, Willow goes to work at the burger joint Harpy's, and I only mention it because her tall drink of water Beau, who works as a cook there and always has a cherry sucker in his mouth, is charming as fuck, and they totally flirt with each other, even though Willowdean is convinced he's just nice and thinks he shamelessly flirts with everyone. Mm-hmm. Also, it's pretty cute how they flirt,
yeah.
Although I do have to say one thing about Beau. He has a major politician's haircut.
Oh!
Yes, I just wanted to do something else besides part it on the side. After Willowdean's job, she goes home opening the fridge to grab a bite, but since her mom is on a diet, to fit into her original pageant dress, the only thing in the fridge is lettuce and some cherry tomatoes. She tries to go to her room, but her mom, who is sitting at her makeup table, stops her, dropping that mom shade. TM. Dumplin'! "Oh, honey, your forehead's looking greasy. I hope you're not eating that crap at Harpy's. Now be a dear and change into that floral dress I got you for Aunt Meet-Me's wedding. And run a comb through your hair. We gotta get going."
Oh.
Willowdean tries to back out. "Oh, Mom, I'm sorry. I already have plans with Elle. but her mom will not hear it. Whittledean, you know I can't drive myself. Elle can tag along with us. She'll like it. Just let her know we got to be ready in 10 minutes. And we soon find out why Rosie can't drive herself, because she's bound up with so many compression garments and hermetically sealed into her dress, so she needs to lay down in the back of the seat to get there, or else she'll split a seam. Once they arrive, Elle slides her out of the back seat by pulling her out by the feet and kind of tipping her up like a very skinny cow. Cool, 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 cool. Nothing to see here. Turns out Rosie is the celebrity guest to announce the winner of the smaller pageant the next town over, Miss Teen Sweetwater. The many years former Miss Teen Sweetwater warmly greets the many years former Miss Teen Blue Bonnet. Miss Teen Sweetwater is a real peach, mistaking Elle for Rosie's daughter. And when she finds out that actually Willow Dean is her daughter, she kind of grimaces and moves on to other topics. Oof. Totally cash. Including her hopes to have her pageant beat out the Blue Bonnet pageant for the Best Pageant Award. But Rosie can throw down as well, implying that Sweetwater contestants are dressed like hussies with their dress ham skirting the pageant regulation line. The scandal.
It's like your work outfits. The tassels. the miniskirts.
Oh, yes. Why is everybody looking at me? Oh my God, you're making me uncomfortable. Is it because I'm swinging my tatas back and forth to make my tassels go around in propeller circles? Stop staring.
And the teenage girls of the Miss Sweetwater pageant were quite modestly dressed. So,
oh yeah. Yes, they were. So she was just throwing a little bit of shade, like, look at those hemlines. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your Teen Sweetwater cannot touch my Blue Bonnet. I'm sorry, sugar. You better stop talking like that. Regardless of all that mess, Rosie is thrilled to be at the beauty pageant. She just loves them. And when she crowns the new Miss Teen Sweetwater, Willow Dean, for all her talk disparaging beauty pageants, gets a wistful look on her face. And you could tell for a moment she wishes that she was the one being crowned and getting that kind of attention from her mom. Her mom, who is bestowing more attention on an absolute stranger.
Yes.
Than all the attention she's given to Willow Dean up until that point.
What are you talking about? She's told her she's got a greasy forehead. She needs to change into an outfit. And she's provided a delicious iceberg salad with some cherry tomatoes.
Oh, she's got to run a comb through her hair. Mm-hmm.
I was like flashing back on my mom's shade TM. And I was like, oh yeah. Been there, Willow Dean. Been there. The next day at work, Willow Dean finds that Beau has left her a magic eight ball in her locker, and not the drugs, the large
pool. Oh, yeah. I love that magic eight ball. That's some good shit.
Yes. Yeah. The large black plastic ball that has an eight on it that looks like a pool ball. And you turn it over and you ask it questions and it gives you answers.
I can just picture it if it went the other way. What's in your locker?
That looks not good. Definitely not. No. That looks not good with
that. Not that magic eight ball. Okay. Got it.
We see her consult the magic eight ball, and it says, instead of, that looks not good. It says, a very clear-headed, as I see it, yes. I'm guessing she was asking it if Beau really liked her, but she may have just been asking if he gave her the magic eight ball in the first place. But she banters with him. It's clear he gave her the magic eight ball, and their flirting is super sweet.
Or she said, she asked the magic eight ball, would I rather have drugs? As I see it, yes.
Yes, you would. No.
Yes. Yeah.
In spite of her being let down that she was not left drugs in her locker, sadness is a fallen on our hearts because, not because of the lack of drugs, but because we've arrived at the end of summer.
Oh, that was always such a heartbreaking time. Mm-hmm. Gone are the long summer days where you don't got to do shit. Back to the grind of school.
Those summer nights. Yes. And we enter the first day of school. Sadly, Willow Dean wakes up to the sound of packing tape being used and finds her mom packing up Aunt Lucy's stuff. Willow Dean isn't happy about it as she rightfully wants to go through all of her stuff. And it's only been 6 months. And I went through every single thing of my sister's. So I was like,
yeah.
I was like, I feel you, Willow Dean. I feel you. But her mom reminds her that she was supposed to do that over the summer, and she didn't. Also, since they no longer have Lucy's income helping out with the household, Rosie is going to start needing to do pageant dress alterations for extra money, and she needs the space. Willow Dean goes back to bed.
I call bullshit on this because right behind Aunt Lucy's bedroom, she has that nice little cove.
Yeah.
Where they had their Dolly Parton parties, that's almost completely empty except for some strategically placed, like, scarves that are adorning the wall and a dress form. Like, Rosie, goddammit, just shove the boxes in there. For a little while longer, you will have your sewing room and you'd be doing your daughter a solid and actually, like, supporting her and her feelings.
Yeah.
I think that she just wanted to excavate the house of Aunt Lucy. And we get a little more of that later.
Yeah.
This house has been cleansed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was very grateful that my mom was understanding about me going through everything of my sister's before it went out the door. Willow Dean goes back to bed. A perfectly reasonable response, as would I. Elle comes over so they can go to school together, but Willow Dean is nowhere near ready. She's still lying in bed. And Willow Dean shares that her mom is getting rid of Aunt Lucy's stuff, and she really hopes that she finds Lucy's bee brooch. Elle agrees that that bee brooch is symbolic of Aunt Lucy. Then her eyes catch the magic eight ball. "Where'd you get this?" she asks. Willow Dean replies, "Beau gave it to me at work." Elle is excited. Willow Dean, he likes you. But Willow Dean isn't having it. "Guys like that don't go for girls like me." "Agreed, Willow Dean. Agreed." Not anything against Willow Dean. She's awesome and she's cute. But typically, like, and I dealt with this when I dated a person who was very hunky looking as well, where I was just like, are they really interested in me or are they punking me? I didn't know because I'm predominantly used to having guys like that pretend to like me and be mean, you know. And so I was like, I feel you on that one, Willow Dean. But Elle is insistent. "Oh no, he likes you. Guys don't just buy cute things for girls unless they're interested." Willow Dean isn't convinced, and since she doesn't seem to be moving from the bed, Elle lets her know that she'll see her at school and heads out. But Willow Dean is all filled with regrets when, after savvily avoiding the green smoothie her mom made her by grabbing a banana, she gets into her car and, fuck, it won't start. Her mom gives her a ride to school, letting her know she'll get her daughter's car towed to the mechanics so they can figure out what's wrong with it. Willow Dean springs from the car, yelling a hasty, "Thanks!" over her shoulder when she hears being yelled behind her, "Dumplin'! Dumplin'!" Willow Dean swiftly turns around, walking to the car, her mom holding out Will's phone, saying to her, "You forgot your phone." Willow Dean grabs the phone and hastily returns towards school. But the damage has already been done. A good portion of her classmates have heard her nickname, and students titter around her. As she's walking down the hall with Elle, a guy yells after her, "Dumplin', dumplin'." She ignores him, but when she hears the guy honking at Millie, calling her a wide load, blocking her way, and telling Millie that they need to widen the hallways for her, Willow has had enough. She turns around, walks swiftly up to the bully boy, and knees him in the groin. Hail our conquering hero!
That was a great moment. And after she kicked him, she was like, "Oh shit, I did not mean to do. You know what? Yes, I did."
Yeah.
She kind of has that momentary like, "Oh crap, that got away from me quickly, but I do not regret it." Apparently he told on her, because the next thing we know, Willow Dean is being escorted from the school by her mom, who is not at all happy that she got suspended from school on the first day for indecent violence.
Indecent violence.
Rosie is puzzled. Indecent violence? What is that even? Willow Dean sighs. "This is all your fault, you know. I was standing up against a bully who weaponized the nickname you call me, Dumplin'. I know you don't accept me for who I am. You just think of me as fat, round dumpling. I do not fit in your world, Rosie stammers. I just want you to have opportunities. It's harder for bigger girls. I know. I was one. Willow Dean sighs, exasperated. Yes, I've heard the story. You lost the weight the summer before high school, and Lucy didn't, and you went on to win the Miss Teen pageant. Literally your last crowning achievement. Aunt Lucy accepted me for who I was and never made me feel bad about myself. It makes me so sad that you can see past her weight because she was so much more than that. She loved me. She raised me. Rosie has had enough. I'm sorry. I was too busy working to go to your Dolly Parton parties. I needed to put a roof over your head and provide for you because that's what mothers do. Willow Dean leaves in a huff. In a huff!
In a huff!
She's going to walk home because she just can't with her mom. And her mom lets her and huffs on back to work. It's so sad. Like, I've seen this time and time again with my friends as they've gotten older and have kids that kind of push back against them.
Uh-huh.
And they generally resort to that, you know, argument. Like, I did this and I did that and I did this for you. Like, the bare minimum. Yeah. Like, clothed you and fed you and put a roof over your head. But that's not enough.
No.
Especially when you give so much time and energy to your pageants and people you don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Back at home, Willow Dean is using her school-free time to go through Lucy's stuff when she runs across a pageant form that Lucy partially filled out back in 1993 when she was a freshman. Willow Dean's brain hamster starts squeaking away on that wheel. Elle bounds in from a full day at school, congratulates Willow Dean on getting suspended in the first day, and recognizes the mischievous gleam in her friend's eyes. Willow Dean shows her the form and announces that she's going to enter the pageant. Her mom has always been ashamed of her, and now she's going to give her a reason. Elle cocks her head and smirks, kind of like a protest in heels. Yes, she agrees, exactly like a protest in heels. And the game is on!
Okay, I have a question for you, Tam.
Sure.
What would you consider indecent violence to be?
Fuck. Indecent violence. Probably, yeah. In the context, it would be injury to the nether regions or the private parts, perhaps? Like, sucking somebody in the boob, or...
I've committed acts of indecent violence, then.
Oh, against who?
Just a classmate. He was being all, giving me a hard time. I turned around and I need him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That would be indecent violence. Or doing, like, the credit card thing where you take your hand and you swipe it up and down their butt crack and say, like, accept, denied, 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 approved.
That's sexual harassment, Tam. That's not indecent violence.
Tomato, tomato.
Registration day happens for the pageant, and Elle has got Willow Dean's back. But Willow Dean, who has shown up to registration in a red dress and wobbling along in heels, doesn't have the one thing she needs, her mom's signature. When Rosie sees her daughter standing at the registration table, she calls out Willow Dean's full name. Willow Dean Opal, get over here. Willow wobbles over and her mom hisses at her, "What are you trying to do? Make a mockery of the whole pageant? I will not allow you to do that." Willow volleys back. "Turns out Lucy wanted to enter. And if you don't allow me to enter," Willow Dean raises her voice, "you'll be saying to everyone that you think all these other girls are better than your daughter. That she and fat girls don't belong." Rosie.
So genius. Making a scene. And oh, chef's kiss. Mwah, Willow Dean. Good for you.
My mom would be like, "You cool your boots, girly. This is not happening." Yeah. I will not be manipulated in that way. But Rosie, who cares a lot about what people think,
mm-hmm.
not so much. Rosie, who is not interested in being in the middle of a scene, relents, staring at her sternly, saying, "Pageants are harder than you think." Willow Dean returns to the registration table and turns in her form. Elle enters, as does Millie, having heard that Willow Dean was entering. And the number one surprise, Hannah, a punk tomboy who had applauded Willow Dean for kneeing Bully Boy in the balls on the very first day of school.
Oh, shit. So we got Willow Dean. We got Elle. We got Millicent Mitchell Chuck. And we got Hannah the punk tomboy.
Mm-hmm. And the person who plays Hannah actually goes by they, them pronouns in their IMDb profile.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Ah, this is going to be the most colorful pageant Clover City, Texas has ever seen.
Ah. I'm excited. Later, Willowdean is surprised at her work by Millie, Hannah, and Elle showing up for strategy meeting. However, Millie's on a very different page than Willowdean, Hannah, and Elle. She's wanted to be in the pageant since she was a kid, but has never had the nerve. In fact, she forged her mom's signature. Ooh. Good Christian girl like Millie.
Scandal.
Scandal is right.
Scandal.
Because she wouldn't allow her to be part of the pageant. So, Millie shows up to the meeting with colored folders for everyone with ideas on how they can win the pageant. However, Willowdean explains that they joined the pageant to subvert it, and Millie looks at her blankly. Hannah tosses her bangs and explains, "It's a revolt against the oppressive heteropatriarchy unconsciously internalized by the female psyche." Millie softly says, "Oh." Hannah holds up a sugar packet saying, "Here's the pageant." She sets it on the table, then picks up a pepper shaker stating, "And where the paper?" She slams the pepper down on the sugar packet, crushing it. "And this is what we're going to do to the pageant." She pounds the sugar packet further, Ellen stopping her from completely destroying the sugar. Millie is sad. "I don't want to subvert the pageant." Ellen placates her. "Look, we're all doing the pageant, but maybe you should just pull back a little bit." Hannah pops on her sunglasses and says, "Good meeting. Let me know when you're ready to take this all down," and climbs over the booth, leaving Ellen and Millie sitting in the table while Will tries to process everything that has just happened and leaves to help some diners. Ellen says to Millie, "Okay, you can show me your binder, but after that, we have to put it away." Millie happily agrees. "Okay, well, I made yours yellow because you remind me of sunshine." And she starts happily chatting with Ellen about the potential talents that she could do.
And I wrote at the end of this section, Millie is to binders as to what Corinne is to spreadsheets.
I knew I liked Millie for a reason.
And it's all coordinated. And I have different tabs with different items that are all... Corinne is smiling from ear to ear, nodding emphatically. You can't see it, gentle listeners, but that's what she looks like.
It's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous thing.
The meeting was disbanded, but Willowdean still has to finish her shift. And when she goes to take the trash out, Dreamy Bo, with that sucker in his mouth, follows her out, lofting a few of her garbage bags into the bin. He then, oh so casually, asks if she's interested in watching a small meteor shower with him that night. Yes, please. But Willowdean plays it cooler than that, saying, sure. Before her eyes partially roll into the back of their head with the "what the fuck just happened" look on her face as he walks away. That evening, they meet at Bo's truck and hang out in the bed of it, looking at the sky. Bo asks Willowdean who that woman is all over her locker. What? All over her locker? Why, that happens to be the Dolly Parton. And he doesn't know who she is? Are you sure you want to associate with this guy, Willowdean? Corinne wrote that. That's hilarious.
So Willowdean's locker, work locker, if you open it up, there's like Dolly Parton and more Dolly Parton and more Dolly Parton. So yes.
Mm-hmm. Do we need to stage an intervention? She calmly explains who Dolly Parton is, one of the best songwriters of our time, wickedly funny, and always one step ahead of everyone else. Dolly's not just a name, she's a state of mind. That last part was mine, not Willowdean. Okay, Tamara. I don't remember writing that, but fair. Fair, fair, fair. Bo looks at her with hearts in his eyes and goes in for a kiss. Smooth, Bo, smooth. And then they start lightly making out. Until Bo's hand travels a little too close to Willowdean's love handle. She gets self-conscious and kisses interruptuses herself, breaking away with the excuse, it's getting really late. I've got to get home. She quickly rushes away while Bo yells after her, confused, "Wait, what did I do?" She assures him nothing but insists she's got to go and leaves him. Oh, I've been there and done that when somebody grazes my love handle and I'm like, oh. You feel that? I sure feel that. I feel that 10 times more than you probably feel that because it's just like right in the forefront of my mind, like, oh, that's a wiggly bit that I don't want you to touch. Anyways, Willowdean comes home to her mom, who is too focused on her jazzercising to notice that Willowdean wasn't home. Willowdean goes upstairs to her room, looking at herself in the mirror and trying to figure out how the hell she ended up getting kissed by that too cute beau. I hate to say it, but Willowdean is pretty gorgeous. She's good looking. Really, like, yeah. Her face is, like, she has a face for the camera. Her features, they're like refined, like her nose and her cheekbones and everything. I see Willa Dean.
And Willa Dean is played by the actress Danielle McDonald.
Danielle McDonald.
Yeah.
And now we're 4 weeks from the Miss Blue Bonnet pageant. And Elle is giving Willow Dean a ride to pageant dance rehearsal. Pageant dance rehearsal. That's where you rehearse how to talk, so you can say rehearsal instead of rehearsal.
I think it's going to be a hoedown at the pageant dance rehearsal.
Maybe we'll do some square dancing?
Yes.
Do some square dancing for the pageant? Sure enough. On their way there, Willow Dean confesses to Elle that Beau kissed her, and it was amazing until it wasn't. He put his hand on her back, and she freaked out, afraid that he would touch something that he would find repulsive about her. Elle assures her that she's not alone. When her boyfriend Tim touches a zit on her face or puts his hand on her belly, she clams up like a psycho. And Willow Dean nods knowingly, but I know deep down she's like, bitch, please, your stomach and my stomach are like apples and oranges. She didn't say that, but I thought that loudly on her behalf.
Thank you, Tamara, for advocating. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. No, because she outweighs her good friend Elle by good probably 100 pounds. So, oh, yeah, you're self-conscious about your stomach, too? Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. I know she probably is, and it's justified, and everybody has their own battles. But I've had people tell me something like that when I'm complaining, and they similarly say, yeah, I feel that, too. And I'm just like, honey, no, you don't, because you are not in this body.
Yeah. Body dysmorphia is a beast, though.
Mm-hmm.
It'd drive me crazy when one of my exes, who was very good looking and 6 foot tall to my 5'4", and we weighed the same amount, would talk about how fat they were. And I was just like, oh!
I feel that. I do. And I know that body dysmorphia is a thing. I just know that, like, I just try to be mindful about that thing.
Yeah.
Probably because I have a whole lot of family and friends that are very, very skinny.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I am the biggest person in the room in a group. And I'm just like, huh.
This next section I call, very subtly, spoiler alert, Will blows up her friendship. I'm good at that. They finally arrive at practice late. Rosie asks the room of teenage girls who are warming up to raise their hand if they've memorized the choreography from the link she sent them all last week. A bunch of people raise their hands, including Millie, and surprise, surprise, Elle. Rosie asks Becca, played by Dove Cameron, the girl who is basically the shoo-in to win, to come up front to demonstrate. Becca is thin, has cascading blonde hair, and lips that are perfectly pouty.
Do you think her lips are real? Her lips looked...
I think her lips are real because I used to watch her in a Disney series, which she was quite good in, and those were her lips in the Disney series.
Thank goodness. They're gorgeous. Like, people pay good money to have lips like that.
Yeah.
I was like, you're how old and you're getting lip injections?
No, nope, I actually just all think natural. Her, yeah, I just think her lips are like that. Yeah. They're like perfect hearts. Lush hearts. Yeah.
Pillowy.
They're pillowy.
Pillowy pouty.
Pillowy pouty perfection. Rosie scans the room to choose another girl and picks Ellen. Ellen moves up front next to Becca, and they flawlessly do the routine that's like a little line dance with some spins and hip swivels. Becca happily high-fives Ellen, excited that they knocked it out of the park, and Willow Dean looks on disapprovingly. When Rosie has all the contestants do a trial run of the dance, Willow Dean just stands there, pissed. It's like when they show, you know, say like the serial killer or something in a scene, and it's just like, oh, there's all these people moving, and then there's the one person in the crowd that has the eyes that are staring.
Yes.
Oh,
one of these kids is doing their own thing. One of these kids is not the same. Can you tell me which kid is doing their own thing? Now it's time to play that game.
And I have to say, I was surprised by Becca because I thought she was going to be like super aloof. And she actually seemed like a genuinely friendly, nice person.
Yeah. Not like, ugh, Elle, don't outshine me in the front while we're doing the demonstration, bitch.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
She high-fived her and was excited.
Yeah, she acted just kind of goofy, and I was like, oh, that's sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody was sitting, like, next to her during the, when everybody was, like, waiting in line at the pageant registration. She was just sitting by herself, and I think, I was like, oh, I think that she's just, like, one of those people who's actually, like, pretty cool, but people are afraid to approach her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Elle's coworker was like, she's the enemy. Yeah. She's the one we have to beat. So she might just be vilified because she's the front runner.
Yeah. Which most of the time when women say, other girls don't like me because I'm so pretty, I actually beg to differ on that. But I think in this case, she may have had that as an issue.
Hmm.
However, Will doesn't do a thing, and Millie, when she's doing the dance, knocks it out of the park, and Hannah acts a fool, wiggling and waggling this way and that. After rehearsal, Ellen happily approaches Willow Dean, but Willow Dean shakes her fist in the air, yelling, curse your son but inevitable betrayal. Well, not literally, but she was doing it in her heart, basically. She's pissed at Elle for knowing the choreography because they're supposed to be protesting. On top of it all, Elle couldn't possibly know what it's like because she could actually win the pageant as opposed to Millie, Hannah, and Willow Dean. On top of it all, Ellen works at a store that doesn't even have inclusive sizing, so she's basically part of the problem. Elle is hurt and says, you know, there are better ways to subvert the pageant than ruining everyone's fun. She starts to walk away, but turns around and says to Willow Dean, you know, I've never thought of you as fat. I'm like, fuck off, Elle. Like, that is like the worst thing to say. And then turns on her heel and leaves. Suddenly, Hannah pops up behind Willow Dean saying to her, just because we're being honest here, I've got to say, I've always thought you were fat. Willow Dean stonily stands there trying to process everything that happened and what the fuck she's gonna do next. One evening, she comes home and sadly grabs the salad, the sad, sad salad. No beets, no carrots, no, just let it, iceberg lettuce and little cherry tomatoes.
Well, that's so gross. You can put celery. Or some mini sweet peppers or some shredded carrots.
Yes.
Something.
Yes.
Something. Sliced olives, green olives with the garlic inside. That's what I do with my salads.
Ooh. Okay. I need to take some inspiration from you. But I will tell you that Rosie did not take any inspiration from you. So Willadine, she heads upstairs where she hears Becca, who is there getting her dress fitted, confiding in her mom. I really appreciate this. You know, my parents just don't understand the whole pageant thing. When Rosie sees her daughter pass by, she calls out, hey, Will, Becca's here. Willadine pauses in the doorway and smiles sadly, saying hi to Becca. Rosie asks, Dumplin', will you grab those pins for me? Will enters the room, grabbing the pins and standing in front of Becca, who's draped in her pageant dress. Becca says casually, slash not casually, oh, hey, you work with Bo over at Harpies. Willadine confirms, and then Becca says confidingly to Rosie, Bo Larson is this new boy at school, and he's such a cutie. Am I right? Willadine uncomfortably laughs and says, yeah, quickly exiting the room. As she leaves, she hears Becca say to Rosie, I'm going to ask Bo to the Sadie Hawkins dance.
And I'm surprised that Willow Dean doesn't turn tail, run back into that room and say, Jolene, 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 Jolene. I'm begging you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 Jolene. Please don't take him just because you can.
Nice. Thank you for the Dolly interlude. I appreciate that. That was glorious.
Anyways. When Willow Dean gets to her room, she tries calling Elle, but she's at work, so can't really talk. Willow Dean pauses, her eyes filling with tears. You know, it doesn't feel right, us fighting like this. Elle sighs. Well, it doesn't feel right to be judged for things I have no control over. I gotta go. She hangs up, and Willow Dean sadly starts going through her aunt's stuff again, looking for that bee brooch. She doesn't find it, but she does find Lucy's glittery Dolly Parton scrapbook. In it is a flyer for The Hideaway. Willow Dean's brain hamster starts squeaky, squeaky, squeaking, working the wheel when suddenly it stops looping around once with the wheel. An idea has occurred to her, and she turns to her magic eight ball for advice, and she can't turn to L. She shakes it, asking, "Should I invite the weirdos?" That's me shaking the magic eight ball.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
Does she invite the weirdos? And what would she be inviting the weirdos to if she did? Let's speculate wildly. Let's see the hideaway. It is spelunking cave tours.
Okay.
No.
What about it's the place like the Hefty Hideaway in Hairspray where you can do a clothing montage of different outfits?
Oh, that's good. Or the Hideaway, a adult store for sex toys.
Perfect for teenage girls to be going into. Yes.
Also, the spelunking one probably would not be a good thing for the teenage girls to be going to that are entering a pageant. Well, better than the sex
team
toys.
Team building.
Though.
Team building. Not the sex toys, but the spelunking.
Sex toy team building. Hey, it's a thing to get real, real closeness with your girlfriend.
Let's wait until we're over the age of 18 to do that.
Okay, fine.
Although, Tam, I'm sorry. I will do a lot of team building exercises with you. Sex toy team building, not so interested in.
I understand that. I respect it. And what would she be inviting the weirdos to? Find out with us after the break. Oh, and we're back. When we last left, Willow Dean was using a magic eight ball to make life decisions, and apparently what she saw was, as I see it, yes. Because we see a minivan pulling into a dirt parking lot filled with Millie, Hannah, and Willow Dean. Millie and Willow Dean are reluctant to leave the van, but Hannah is chomping at the bit. "Let's go," she says, bursting out of the van. They approach the Hideaway, and a bouncer asks them for IDs. Hannah's disappointed. "No wonder your Aunt Lucy never took you here. It's a bar." But a guy behind the bouncer hears her and pops his head out from behind him. "Lucy who?" Willow Dean responds sadly. "Lucy Dixon?" And the guy responds enthusiastically. "Lucy, I love her. She's good people.
Aww.
Come on in. I'm Dale." He sweeps open a glittery curtain and the trio enters. This time, Willow Dean and Hannah are looking very uncomfortable, but Millie is now grinning. She seems delighted by something. What? I'm not exactly sure. Maybe it was a glitter curtain? The guy brings them to a table and warns them, "Now, I don't want to see you at the bar, okay?" They nod, taking it all in, sit down, and soon we hear an announcer. "And now, sit tight, stare forward, and get ready for the first Dolly of the night." Everybody claps, and a glorious, chunky version of Dolly Parton comes out in a spangly dress and a giant blonde wig, lip-syncing to a song. It's a Dolly drag show!
Yay!
At first, they don't know what to make of it, and Millie confusedly asks, "Wait, is that a man?" But by the finale, while five Dolly Partons dance and lip-sync on the stage to Parton's song, "Two Doors Down," Hannah admits, "I almost like this." Millie admires a Dolly shaking and shimmying in front of her. "He's gorgeous!" And Willow Dean is smiling from ear to ear. The show seems to be done when one of the Dollies introduces a surprise guest. Miss Rearranged!
Woo!
I love that drag name, Rearranged.
It took me a while to figure out. I was like halfway through the writing of the script, like halfway through after reading her name, I was like, "Oh, that's Rearranged! Oh, I get it!"
Yes! Rearranged! They said it was rearranged! Rearranged! A spotlight flashes on the back of the room, and sitting on the bar is a glorious black Dolly in a sparkly silver dress with obligatory blonde wig. She banters to the crowd, announcing, "Y'all know what Dolly said. Thank the Lord I was born a girl, because if I wasn't, I'd sure be a drag queen." The bar hoots around her, and a few men in the audience touch her hands as she makes her way to the stage and launches in lip-syncing Jolene.
Ooh.
And Willow Dean is thrilled. It's her favorite song. Miss Rearranged has the room captivated. After the show is over, Dale comes back to the table asking them what they thought of the show. And Millie gushes, "I'm feeling feelings I've never felt before." Dale nods his head knowingly. "This place will do that to you." And then asks Willow if she has a little time she can go backstage as there's someone who really wants to see her. Hannah and Millie happily offer to wait in the van, and Willow Dean heads backstage to who?
Ooh.
Who's back there, Corinne? Who's back there?
An ex-murderer. Sorry. Dumplin' ends tragically. But not really. And much to my delight, it is the sparkly Miss Rearranged. Woo! Who wanted to meet Willow Dean, gushing over her. Child, I saw you out in the audience, thought I was looking at a ghost of Lucy Dixon. It's just not the same around her without her. Just not the same around here without her. She wraps Will in a big hug. Willow Dean exclaims tearfully, I can't believe you knew her. Rearrange sits down. So what brings you out here, sugar? Willow Dean confesses, I thought by coming here, I might feel closer to her. I got myself into something for her, really, and I'm not sure which way to go. I just wish I could talk to her. Rhea nods her head assuringly. Corinne's waterworks are like totally going during this whole entire portion right here. And I feel like a little more clamped right now. I'm like watering up a little bit. It's fine though. I'm breathing through it.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. I could totally see you like writing your nose. Oh God, that was beautiful.
I was literally at my desk at work being like, quick, wipe the tears away before clients come in. Rhea nods her head assuringly. Lucy always had a knack for seeing through the bullshit and finding the answers. I wouldn't have ever gone up on that stage if it weren't for Lucy, but she saw that that's where I belong. I bet you already know what Lucy would say. Hell, we both do.
Go big or go home, but either way, do it in a red pair of shoes.
They smile at each other, and Rhea says, it took Lucy years to get to her fully embodied, bold, beautiful self, just like it does the rest of us. You know that Dolly said, figure out who you are and do it on purpose. Willow Dean nods, her eyes glittering with emotion, matching Corinne's eyes. Rhea continues, imagine just going for it. Moving 10 giant steps forward, she leans towards Willow Dean. We're always here for you, Sugar Plum, okay? Willow Dean thanks Rearranged, who gives her a big red kiss on the forehead. And they part ways with Willow Dean feeling like she had a little more Lucy wisdom, boldness, and magic with her than before she went to the show.
That scene in the hideaway truly surprised me because when they first were in the dirt parking lot, there was choppers lined up and old pickup trucks and tobacco chewing cowboy hardened looking farmer type guys sitting at the bar, and I'm like, oh sweet sassy molassy, this is not gonna end well. But they were all totally into the Dolly drag show.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, don't judge a book by its cover, Tamara. At another pageant meeting, Rosie lets the contestants know that they need final approval for talent, costume, and formal wear from her or the other women sitting behind the table, or the contestant will be disqualified. Fine. Then we get a montage of approving talents intermingled with other contestants yodeling, doing ballet, and spinning batons are L tap dancing, Melly simultaneously tapping, singing a Christian song while spinning hula hoops on her arms, and Hannah holding up a fist and chanting, hey, hey, ho, ho, the patriarchy has got to go. But when assured that that is not a talent, Hannah resorts to karate. And lastly, Willow Dean does the most pathetic magic trick ever, assuring the panel that she will work on it because they will definitely not approve it as is.
Oh, yeah, that was just sad.
It was sad. Rosie reluctantly approves Willow Dean's act, but later at home informs her that she gave her a free pass and there's no shame in quitting. Willow Dean forlornly walks up the stairs saying over her shoulder sadly, thanks for your support, Mom. Mm. But later, when she's at work, she sees Becca chatting up Bo and she just can't. Willow Dean leaves the floor to go out back and take a break. Bo follows shortly behind, standing in the doorway looking at Willow Dean pace the parking lot and asks, you okay? She spins on her heels, plasters a fake smile on her face, and breathes a small, yeah, and then continues to pace. He tries to play it off, but when she doesn't respond to that, he comes out with it. Look, I know you've been avoiding me, but I like you. Willow Dean asks, what about Becca? He scoffs. Yeah, she asked me to a dance, but I'm not going. I don't like her that way. I like you that way.
Mm-hmm.
Willow Dean shakes her head. We don't work together in the real world. You belong with someone like Becca, not someone like me. Look at me. She gestures up and down her body. Do you not realize the epic shitstorm you have to endure if you are with me? Beau shakes his head. I don't care what other people think, and I think you're beautiful. To hell with what anyone else has to say that ever made you feel less than that.
Oof.
He eyes her sadly and realizes it's fruitless. Doesn't really matter what I think, does it? He asks, and then goes back inside the kitchen, defeated to flip burgers, leaving a teary Willow Dean in the parking lot, more frazzled than when she first came out there.
Aww.
Willow Dean! Come on, Willow Dean!
So sad! I know, I was like, you can be with that hottie! And I bet his kisses taste good because cherry, but no!
And you know what you have over on Becca Willardine? You've got some glorious tatas going on. Like, especially when she wears that uniform and they are squeezed in there real, real tight. I can see why Beau likes you.
Well, and he sees her for who she is, you know?
Yes, she's way more interesting than Becca.
So, in the last section, Will went to the hideaway. But now, in this section, Will hides away.
Huh?
Oh... Comedic genius? Yes. Saturday Night Live, you can call me up any day now.
You know what I've always liked about you, Corinne? Your modesty.
Thank you. I'm so great, I understand why you would think that. After work, Willow Dean goes home. She's sad and all messed up in the head, but should be at the hideaway with Millie and Hannah to work on their talents with the ever so helpful drag queens. Instead, she goes into the magical room off of Lucy's bedroom that Tamara mentioned previously.
That could have housed all those boxes, I'm just saying.
Could have housed all those boxes. Lucy had decorated with sparkle and scarves on the ceiling. And Will cries and mourns her aunt, thinking about her childhood with her and eventually falling asleep. She wakes up determined to rid herself of Lucy and her dreams, tearing up Lucy's Miss Blue Bonnet application and loading her car with a bunch of Lucy's stuff to donate. But one of the boxes won't fit no matter how hard. Well, Dean tries to slam the trunk down on it.
A solid plan. It's not fitting? Squish it down. Still not fitting? Squish down harder.
Yes! Still not fitting? Apparently throw box onto the ground and just shove different items from the box in there.
Mm-hmm.
She hastily tosses the clothes from the box into her trunk, but when she hears a sound like a coin falling on the ground, she slams the trunk shut and squats down to see what made the noise. Lucy. Lucy made the noise. On the ground is Lucy's...
Her urn?
Yes. Her urn just comes clookity 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 out. Suddenly she's poofed with some ashes.
And it's her Aunt Lucy back as a genie of sorts to grant all of her wishes.
Oh my gosh! What if you could rub the urn of your loved one to have them be like, droop, hi, I am here.
I still have my dad's urn and I do not like that scenario at all.
Well, you would need to do that holding a can of Budweiser.
Oh yeah, yeah. To placate the spirits.
Yes.
Oh, gentle father, I bring you Budweiser.
I'd have a cherry icy for Bridget. So, you know, yeah. You got to slake their thirst. Otherwise, they'll, you know, slake your soul. And that's just bad.
Oh, that's not terrifying at all.
No, it's fine. Totally cool. Totally
Let's
chill.
Totally do that. Sounds like a grilled chill Saturday night, Corinne.
Look, I am familiar with the Monkey's Paw story. I have no desire to bring back anyone from the dead. Thank you.
Got it. Well, stop trying to make me your fucking guinea pig with my dad and a Budweiser. You do it first and see what happens, and maybe I'll summon Bridget after if things go well for you.
Yes.
Okay, sounds good. Great.
Look, I just, you know, I'm trying to help your connection with your family. That's all.
The connection is fine.
Twitch.
As a matter of fact, I need less connection. I do not need any spirits coming down the pipeline unexpectedly. Connection's good. Just leave it that way.
But Ray, if you could help Tam get a different job, either that or haunt her boss, kind of Dickens A Christmas Tale style. one or the other will work just great.
Okay.
So when she's throwing the clothes into the trunk, something falls on the ground, and lo and behold, it is Lucy's signature bling, her B pin, the thing that Willow Dean wanted the most out of her aunt's stuff. She takes it as a sign, as well as she should, gathers herself together, and calls Hannah, who answers her with, "About time." No one knows how to cut to the chase like Hannah does.
Mm-mm.
Willow Dean responds, "It's going to be a shit show." And Hannah happily responds, "I'm counting on it." And with 10 days to go, Will, Hannah, and Millie travel back to the hideaway to work on their numbers. Cue a montage, montage, montage of the trio shaking, shimmying, and getting makeovers from their fairy drag mothers.
Aww. Mm, I love a good montage.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good montage. You're just going to have to watch that movie and see it for yourself.
But if you want, if you want to describe any of it, I won't feel like my toes are being stepped on.
Oh, no. That's like one of those things that you cannot you probably could, but you just got to watch
it. Yeah, you just got to watch it.
Magic, the magic of makeovers.
Yes.
Mm, the magic of makeover montages.
Ooh.
But enough about that, because we finally made it. The day of the 85th annual Miss Blue Bonnet pageant. On the front page of the local paper are pictures of all the girls participating in the pageant, along with the paragraph bio. All the contestants gather in the auditorium for their preliminary event, where Rosie introduces the three judges. Tabitha Herrera from Tabitha Salons, elevating hair for over 2 decades. Clay Dooley from Clay Dooley Chevy, where value meets quality. And the very gorgeous Burgundy Herrera, once a Miss Teen herself, who now graces the halls of Century 21.
Yay.
I always wondered why they had the preliminary event separate from like the main event, because I was like, usually those are included in the pageants, but they were doing it before the pageant and without an audience, which I thought was an interesting choice.
Yeah, sometimes for the pageants, they do the Q&A with not in front of the audience. And I think probably part of it is just because it takes so much time. It
takes so much time, and sometimes their answers are just stupid. You heard some of those people, "What would you do to change the world?" And the children and the education, and I would educate the children with education and school because they need to be educated and for the children. Thank you.
Which is exactly what I was thinking, that particular beauty pageant contestant who basically did that and was like, "And the Iraq?" It was like,
yes.
Yes, and also the Iraq as well. I love that clip.
They probably had quite a few answers where they're like, "Oh no, honey, that does not paint you in the best light. Let's just do this without the audience participation." Yeah. Rosie hands things over to the judges for the question and answer portion of the pageant, which apparently isn't open to the public, which we've discussed at length. Willow Dean is first up, being asked, "What does loyalty mean to you?" Rosie watches from the wings while Willow Dean gives an excellent speech about loyalty and handily but subtly weaves in an apology to Elle, saying loyalty means never giving up on someone, but loyalty is not blind and shouldn't be taken for granted. Loyalty means apologizing when you're wrong because of the trust you've built over time. Loyalty is true friendship. After the question and answer period, the girls are shown backstage where they get to have their own seat and mirrored light table to do their makeup. Willow Dean goes to hers, and her mom, Rosie, has placed a card on it with her nickname of Dumplin' written on the outside. Elle immediately turns it over, saying, "It's just a name, but if you hate it, I do too." They quickly make up with each other, Willow Dean apologizing to Elle more thoroughly, stating, "I never should have said you weren't cut out for the resistance, and you can be friends with whoever you want. I'm sorry I was so controlling." Aww. Elle assures her that she may have other friends, but Willow Dean is her bestie. Mm-hmm. Bestie! Hell yeah.
Wreck-It Ralph 2 illustrates the kind of trying to control your friend because they're like, "No, they're yours!" And they like illustrate that kind of how it's better to let people breathe a little bit and let people do, you know, other things and stuff like that really well in Wreck-It Ralph 2. It's so good.
Mm.
Willa Dean gets a ride home with Elle, and they sing gleefully in her Jeep to Dolly Parton songs. When Will arrives home, she heads upstairs to her room and is surprised to see her mom there. Rosie is holding Lucy's application for Miss Blue Bonnet, which she has taped back together. She confesses tearfully to Willa Dean, "You're right. I never really knew who Lucy was, and I don't understand this. Why didn't she do it? I didn't know anyone bolder than Lucy. Her confidence scared me." Rosie sets Lucy's pageant application down and reflects. "The year that I won the pageant, I needed a dress, but we didn't have money for anything fancy. Lucy and I scoured secondhand stores until we found something. I told her, 'This is good enough. No one's going to notice a few missing sequins.' But Lucy said, 'In life, the difference between winning and losing is all in the details.' And she stayed up all night working on that dress." Rosie scans the room. "Where are they?" Willow Dean responds, "I donated all of Lucy's boxes." Rosie sighs sadly. "I think I gave too much of her away." And she leaves the room. I'm like, tears.
Just because you purged the house of Aunt Lucy is not going to make you feel better, Rosie. Then when you realize that, it's too late. It's the evening of the pageant, and the girls are getting ready in their stations when a voice cuts through the girls excitedly chit-chatting. "Millie, Amethyst, Mitchell, Chuck!" The crowd parts, and there is Millie's mom, pissed that Millie went behind her back and did this. "The Needlepoint Club? Really?"
Played by Kathy Najimy.
Oh, yeah. Kathy Najimy. Millie apologizes to her mom but doesn't back down. "I'm sorry, but you're wrong. When you said I couldn't compete, and I get that you were just trying to protect me, but sometimes you just need to support me." Millie's mom starts to pull her out of the room, saying, "We'll discuss this in the car." But Willa Dean, who's been watching the entire thing along with Elle and Hannah, and probably a fair share of the other girls, pleads, "Please let her participate. She's worked really hard, and she's been dreaming of doing this since she was 8. Millie nods at her mom, confirming, and she hesitates for a moment and finally relents, but makes Millie promise never, ever to lie to her again. Millie's mom goes out into the audience and takes a seat next to the trio's drag queen glam squad and looks obviously uncomfortable, but is too polite to say, "You're a man, but you're wearing makeup." That goes against the natural order of things. But she just says it really loud in her head because she's a church lady.
Yes.
And polite.
Yes.
But
and now, it's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. It's time to meet contestants at the Blue Bonnet Pageant tonight.
It's time to put on makeup. It's time to dress up right. It's time to raise the curtain on the Blue Bonnet Pageant tonight.
Very, like, smooth, right? Smooth.
Goddamn tongue twister at the Blue Bonnet Pageant. You can't say that. The Blue Bonnet Pageant tonight. The Blue Bonnet Pageant tonight. The Blue Bonnet Pageant. Yeah, that's a fucking tough-ass thing to say. Oh,
the Blue Bonnet Pageant is happening. The curtain raises on the stage, and the girls, dressed like really cute versions of the Texas flag in blue V-neck tops with blue belts that have a single star on the front and center and a red and white skirt. They weave in and out of each other, but Hannah, Millie, and Willow Dean, who got extra tutoring from their fairy drag mothers, and so they have a little extra sparkle, shake, and shimmy. At one point, Hannah passes Millie, twirling her, and the crowd goes wild. Willow Dean executes her routine flawlessly with a little extra pizzazz, and Rosie watches proudly from the wings. The girls hustle to change into their health and fitness outfits.
Oh, God, I hated that so bad. Health and fitness.
It's like,
seriously?
Just call it a fucking swimsuit category. Jesus Christ.
I know. If it's health and fitness, why aren't they coming out with leotards and leg warmers?
I know. Where's their
bras?
Juicy sweats? Come on.
Seriously.
Oh. Willow Dean waits anxiously with Elle. She watches the perfect Becca strut her stuff, dying inside. Elle taps her arm. Okay, in 1971, Dolly's seventh single as a solo artist, written the same year as Nickels and Dimes. Willow Dean can't manage anything but... Elle smiles broadly at her. It's all wrong, but it's all right. Now let's do this. She gives Willow Dean the boost she needed before Will sheds her robe. The announcer says,
Miss Willadine Dixon. And she walks onto the stage. She stops center stage, posed with her hand on her hip, the front of her suit saying, "Everybody." And Elle steps out onto the stage next to her with "Is A" written on her suit. The announcer, confused, says, "With Miss Ellen Driver. I'm not sure what's going on here, ladies and gentlemen." The duo turns around and the back of Willadine's suit says, "Swimsuit." And Elle's suit says, "Body." And let's string it all together for those in the back. That's "Everybody is a swimsuit body." Yay! It's written in bold letters on their suit. The crowd goes wild and Millie's mom looks very uncomfortable. The announcer calls out Hannah Perez, who with her very short hair is wearing a black high neck but still very cute bathing suit. She whispers to Millie, "I'm doing this for me, not anyone else." She walks out confidently in her black boots and the judges kind of grimace as she stands in the middle of the stage, gives a double thumbs up, and then struts back into the wings. Then it's Millie's turn. She is looking super cute in a pink gingham 50-style dress bathing suit. She rocks it. She spins and turns, throwing on some sunglasses before she walks off stage. Millie's mom is surprised and so proud. Her daughter is fucking radiant. She taps on the drag queen's shoulder next to her, excitedly remarking, "That's my daughter!"
I don't know why that judge was like glaring at Hannah Perez. I'm like, she looks just as good as every other beach bathing suit body out there.
I think it was the shoes because she's wearing some Docs instead of heels with her, you know, with her health and probably fitness look.
She looked like she could kick all those other bathing suits' asses. That's all I'm saying.
I know. She looked really good. She looked like Sharon Stone in, you know.
Oh, yeah. In that turtle, like the.
Yes, the turtleneck. Yeah.
Indecent Exposure?
Yes.
No, Indecent. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Moving on to the talent segment. Willadine is called and she comes out in her sparkly magician's outfit and blonde wig. "Here we go again" by Dolly Parton plays in the background and she begins lip syncing and doing some dancey flourishes. She flings her top hat dramatically across the stage, makes a magic wand appear, produces some scarves from her sleeves and magically makes them change colors, all without missing a beat. Then the music picks up, the lights go down, and her wand starts glowing, and she skillfully makes it dance around her with no hands.
Ooh.
She's fan-fucking-tastic and has come a long way, baby.
Aww.
Her friends smile from the sidelines. They knew she had it in her. And at the end of her performance, the crowd goes wild. Her fairy drag mothers felt like they just gave birth. And Rosie is so proud and relieved, but mostly proud. Then it's Millie's turn, and she comes out looking like a beautiful pinup girl wearing a great vintage dress and sings high and mighty. She's lost the hula hoop and tap dancing and's got some soul in her voice, and we're all the better for it.
Oof.
Because it's glorious.
Yes.
She is a triumph. Willadine, who is watching from the wings, gets pulled away. Her mom needs to see her right away.
So when Millie is initially singing high and mighty, when she's got the hula hoops and the tap dancing, I'm listening to that song and I'm like, this has got to be the worst Christian song I've ever heard in my life. He is high and mighty. And then after her drag formation, it is gorgeous. And I'm like, it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm.
I got a little teary-eyed there.
Oh, I was feeling Jesus in my soul. I'm just saying.
Ooh. I was feeling high and mighty too.
Willadine enters her mom's dressing room. Rosie looks softly at Willadine. "I'm so proud of you. What you've done is really beautiful. Lucy would be so proud of you too." Willadine smiles happily, but she knows, and she says, "But my talent wardrobe and my song were not approved, and neither was the formal I was about to wear." Rosie says sadly, "Technicalities." But Willadine knows that she has been disqualified. She asks, "I know I can't win, but can I at least finish it out? Walk with everybody?" Rosie shakes her head. "Preparation is key. I'm sorry. That wouldn't be fair to the other girls. I'm so sorry, Dumplin'." She pauses a moment, slapping her forehead. You hate it when I call you that. I'm sorry, I'm trying. Willardine has Grace now. It's just a word. Dumplin', Will, Willardine, it's all me. Suddenly, Elle bursts through the door. My escort is tossing his cookies in the bathroom and I don't know what to do. Will offers, you can have mine, I'm disqualified. Elle balks. What are you talking about? If you're disqualified, then I'm out too. I'm not doing this without you. Rosie's brain hamster is rocking and rolling on that wheel. And finally, it powers on a light bulb. Ding! She says, well, hold on a moment. There's nothing in the bylaws that says that a disqualified contestant cannot escort a fellow contestant. Yay, everybody wins! Willardine is about to leave to get ready when Rosie asks, can you just zip me up before you leave? Will happily obliges, except she can't. That zipper is not going up. The fabric divide is just too wide. Much like we once thought the divide between Rosie and Willardine were, but actually they managed to bridge it in this moment. Sadly, they weren't able to bridge the zipper divide for the dress. Rosie starts freaking out. What am I going to do? I don't have a backup. Willardine can't resist and says, preparation is key, but shift gears. Okay, trust me. Give me 5 minutes. Because she's talking to her mama. I can make this work. And she rushes out, leaving an envelope and a small box behind on the counter. I'm not crying, you're crying! Rosie opens the envelope, and inside is a piece of paper cut into a rectangle with scalloped edges. It says, love big. Lucy taught me that. And I do love you, Mom. Will. Rosie tears up, putting her hand over her heart, but also trying to keep it together. Her makeup, for fuck's sake! She opens the box, and in it is Lucy's bee pin. Cue waterworks! And Rosie desperately blowing a hairdryer on her face in an attempt to keep her makeup intact. And I don't need to worry about that because I don't wear makeup for the most part. So I just sobbing ugly tears. A few minutes later, she gets a knock on the door, and it's Willardine's original fairy drag mother, rearranged, but not dressed in drag, so he goes by Lee. He has come prepared with a dress bag over his shoulder and says to Rosie, Will said you might need some help.
We return to the pageant and the announcer says, introducing the 10-time winner of the Best Texas Pageant of the Year Award and breaking with tradition on a night full of surprises, please welcome your favorite blue bonnet. Put your hands together for Miss Rosie Dixon. And damn! She went from a vintage, tastefully sequenced dress in beige to a high-low cut, or as I like to call it, a mullet dress, in bright teal. Her hair is down, and her dress has it all. Fluffy boa material. It has been bedazzled, and it is full of silver accents. The sleeves, well, they are bell sleeves, of course, with the blue boa flourish. She looks like Elvis from Graceland's Wet Dream.
Ooh.
This dress has a little bit of everything.
Yes, it does.
Everything. And while Rosie feels very self-conscious in it, she's keeping it together. Lee looks at Rosie from the audience with his other two queens, asking them, do I look that good in that dress? They all say a flat no, but a flat no with love. Rosie starts introducing the couples for the formal wear part of the pageant, looking draglicious. Willardine happily escorts Elle, but before she leaves stage, she stands next to her mom and they have a moment. Rosie looks at her daughter and quietly says, you look so beautiful.
Aww.
The other contestants come out, Hannah dressed in a tux and is escorted by a girl as well, but by choice, not by disqualification. Once all the contestants are lined up, Rosie praises them all on their beauty, poise, and mostly, she turns towards stage and looks pointedly at Willardine, their courage.
Aww.
Now to announce the winners. The second runner-up is... Callie, Elle's co-worker from Sweet 16. And when she got second runner-up, Corinne writes, Millie better not be out of this race because she ruled and way outshone Callie, whose talent was a bad ventriloquist act.
Yeah.
She has no strong feelings about that whatever because talent was in serious quotation marks.
That, you know, the question and answer period that they don't like show in a lot of beauty pageants. I think that one of the reasons is so that they have plausible deniability when somebody like underqualified wins because they're just like really pretty, but they gave like terrible answers for the question and answer period.
Aha.
Yeah.
A valid point of view. But back to the show, because we're about to find out who the first runner-up is. And the first runner-up in the pageant is... Millie Mitchell-Chuck! What the fuck? The crowd goes wild. We go wild! This is what the girls wanted. They started a revolution, and they got one in the best way possible. The fairy drag mothers cheer excitedly from their seats. Millie's mom excitedly hugs one of them. That's her daughter! Willowdean and Elle look at each other happily and nod, while Millie is ablaze with happiness and surprise and slowly makes her way to accept her crown. And first prize does not go to Hannah, but the perfect Becca, because she looks glorious and was polished enough in all the other things. Wah, wah, wah. And because we didn't hear her answer from the queue for the Q&A portion, as Corinne pointed out.
Yeah, and I think that Millie's talent section beat just about everybody's, and her health and fitness section did as well. She was glorious, and I really think she should have gotten first place, but the fact that she got second runner-up is still fantastic.
Yeah.
Knowing the results, Willowdean heads out wearing the sparkly red dress she had donned to escort Elle. She drives to Harpy's and waits out back next to her car until she sees Beau taking out the trash. She closes her car door and Beau turns, a smile immediately lighting up his face when he sees her. He walks towards Willowdean and she says... I consulted the magic eight ball. Beau gets a sly smile. Oh, yeah? What did it say? She cocks her head to the side. Outlook good. And then they move closer and closer and they kiss. And it's a good one. He pulls away. Did you win? She smiles saucily. No, I got disqualified. Beau chuckles. That's my girl. And they kiss some more. To add on to the mega happy ending, Dolly's song Two Doors Down plays, and we're transported into the future at the Hideaway. The queens are lip-syncing to the song. What's the melody?
Two doors down, we're having our own party. Two doors down.
I'll probably just use yours because it's perfect. And in the audience is Willowdean, Rosie, Millie, her mom Elle, Beau, and a bevy of others. Rosie's face lights up when Will is invited on stage and Will joyfully lip syncs along with the song. Everyone is dancing, singing, having fun. And that's where we end things. Mega happy ending style.
Yay! I love a mega happy ending!
So, Miss Tamara, what did you think of Dumplin'? How many dry kisses?
I'm giving this movie 5 dry kisses. This has become, in the last couple of days, I realized, one that I'm going to keep in my arsenal that I will probably always watch if it comes on, well, on Netflix specifically, so it's never just going to be on the TV when you click through the channels. But that's my baseline. If it was on, I will probably stop and watch it because I love this movie. Mm-hmm. It's got the mega happy ending that I like. When I first watched it, I was very surprised by the pageant results, pleasantly surprised. I thought, yes... Millie Mitchell-Chuck probably should have, I mean, her getting the first runner-up place, it was warranted. She did fabulous. Yes. And I think it was also that they were shifting the perception of the pageant judges. Like, you don't have to look like a cookie cutter pageant queen to win. You don't have to do the same thing all the other girls do. So it was like the fruits of their movement's labors, like Millie winning that second place or first runner-up spot, yeah. I should say. So I was pleasantly surprised by that. I didn't know it was going to happen with Willowdean, and her story arc was also really nice because she reconciled with her mom. Her mom finally saw her in the way, like without her going through the whole pageant song and dance, yeah. like caused her mom to see her as the person that she was,
yeah,
which was surprising as well. So love that story arc. Love that they stayed best friends. Love that they made new best friends. Love the fairy drag queens. I want some in my life right now. And then of course there was the love story where Beau's like, I fucking like you. I like you just who you are, even though you can't believe it. Like, shut up and kiss me.
Aww.
So, and then also just the Lucy, the Aunt Lucy, who shares the same name as my grandmother, who is also kind of like a saving grace in my life. So that might just give a little extra tick in the right direction for me for giving it 5 dry kisses, because I thoroughly enjoyed this movie and
We'll probably watch it many, many more times, sobbing my eyes out, hopefully without makeup. Corinne, what do you give this movie?
You know, I think I'm going to give this 5 dry kisses as well. And speaking of names, I just loved the fact that Lucy and Willow Dean had the same middle name, Opal.
Oh.
Yeah. But I really liked it. And while it doesn't have a lot of diversity, like racial diversity in it, it does have a lot of size diversity in it. And like, I would say just people representing different kinds of lifestyles and people, like, you know, Hannah was very queer and there were the drag queens and all of that too. So
Miss Rearranged.
Yes.
Was black.
Who was fantastic. And he had a really nice role in the movie.
I was trying to figure out if Hannah was supposed to be Hispanic, because wasn't her last name like Martinez or something?
Yeah, I think that perhaps she was supposed to be Hispanic. Yes.
But not overtly so. But I mean, what is that anyways?
Yeah, exactly.
She must talk with an accent. My name is Hannah Martinez. I'm here to blow up this fucking pageant.
Well, I mean, my one complaint actually about this movie is Hannah, not Hannah, but I feel like they cut down her parts into basically nothingness, and she had something different to provide, and they didn't feature her like they featured Millie. And she is showing up to the beauty pageant like she's doing a tux, and she's doing these different things, and she and I felt like they didn't really do right by Hannah in representing her. But I was glad that she was there in the ways that she was, and I just thought this was a really good movie that dealt with a lot of really interesting topics. And I'm not crying, you're crying. I was fine. I didn't cry throughout the entire movie. Totally cool. So what did I ran through a box of Kleenexes at my desk.
Yeah, I only cried towards the end, so there.
So, Miss Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we are doing the Hallmark movie, Unthinkably Good Things.
Ooh, and this is from Hallmark's Mahogany line, which they just started last year, and it's specifically movies featuring predominantly black casts, and as opposed to a lot of Hallmark movies where they're like, oh, here's our person who is black, and they're very much like Cafe con Leche, which is fine, like, because people come in all colors.
In the back, sitting in a cafe, the back of the scene as an extra, and then say, I'll have sugar with that. See, we have a black person in our movie. Uh-huh. See?
And it's like the lightest black person ever. These movies have a variety of different skin tones, hairstyles.
Do they have black writers and directors, I hope, along with the actresses?
I do believe they do. Yes.
Okay, that's awesome. Because sometimes when one race writes for another race, especially if it's like predominantly one race, it sometimes comes off not great.
Yeah.
Not saying that I'm judging or have, you know, predispositions of how this is going to go, but
no, I feel you on that one. And I think that a wider variety of people need to have opportunities, and those opportunities aren't given unless they are actually like spaces made for them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So this,
it's like you got a authentic influences.
The director and writer of this, of Unthinkably Good Things, they're both African-American, so.
Hallelujah.
Yes. So if you have anything you would like to say about Hallmark's Mahogany line, Unthinkably Good Things, Dumplin', beauty pageants, or anything else, feel free to email us, onedrykiss@gmail.com, or reach out to us via the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate or review us anywhere you listen to this podcast. But in the meantime, we appreciate you stopping by. And we bid you adieu with one dry kiss.
Mwah. Mwah.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Woo! Woo!
Same. Look, I see the counter. It's going. The last time I just checked my levels, I was like, oh yeah, the level thing is working. Great.
Yeah,
absolutely going to come in super handy when you're listening to nothing because you didn't press record. Fantastic.